This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project.
Guys, welcome back to the show, or I should say podcast project. Welcome back to the show. It only took 270 something episodes for me to screw that up. That's all good. Practice makes perfect. Guys, this show, we are speaking to Jay Faruja. If you've heard of him before, you may have heard of him through Luca Hosova in the episodes that we've done with him.
I think it's Hosova.
And Jay is a legend in the gym world. Jay was one of those guys like the garage gym warrior. He was the era. He was even the era before Zach Evanesh, which if you listen to Zach Evanesh's interview with us, is like, that is going back.
Yeah.
That's like nearly pre-internet.
Yeah, I think he had like one of the first garage gyms in the world.
Yeah. I think Zach bought equipment off Jay. So this is, you're talking about like ancient Roman times.
1905 or
something. I don't even think the pyramids had been built yet. I think they're like halfway
done. I
believe
the Nazis came right through and left his gym untouched.
Dude, he's gone way back. But no, he's not actually that old.
Since the American Civil War, like his gym has exploded. Popularity.
Jay's a beast, right? Jay's podcast, Renegade Radio, is one of the biggest podcasts in the world in health and fitness. And Jay was, connected with Jay via Luca. So thank you, Luca, for connecting us. And Jay just has some awesome war stories just about some lessons that he's learned, trial and error on himself. I think the best guys aren't always the most scientifically adept students, but instead they're men of just the iron.
Yep.
Like they just put the work in, they grind, they get the knee pain, they get the back pain, they get the experience, they've trained clients. And Jay now helps other fitness professionals with their fitness business. That's not all he does. He obviously sells online programs. He trains people in person. He does a fair few things, but he's found like a really good balance in his life. And I think it's just a really cool, again, just a story and a good journey of someone who's been in the industry for a long time and seen a lot of different fads pass on the nutrition and the training side. So it's just always a fascinating chat. Some really good lessons in there as well about his own training now and how he doesn't really train heavy anymore. And instead of like squatting his strength movements and doing a lot of his strength movements at the front of his workouts, he doesn't at the end. So he puts like more emphasis on the accessory and the rehab stuff and the isolation movements. And then he'll do his compound stuff at the end, which is an interesting approach. And he kind of does it to make sure he doesn't sabotage himself by going too heavy. So an interesting approach there. Look, we'd recommend checking out Jay on Instagram. He's got some really good content there. And then if you like his podcast, you can check that out as well. All right, before we jump into the episode today, the best thing you can do for your body every day is to just insure it. Give yourself some insurance. And we like to say the best insurance is just a scoop of Activate Nutrients.
100%. I mean, it doesn't help much if you like step in front of a bus.
No.
But pretty much everything else, it's got you covered.
I don't know. Like, you could get severely injured, but maybe the extra micronutrients, like, clot the blood faster. And so
maybe
slows the bleeding.
Maybe a very slow-moving bus. No, but I don't know where this has gone, but in all seriousness, it is, supplement that is definitely the first supplement of my day.
It's the first supplement I notice when it runs out.
Yeah.
Put it that way. When it runs out, I'm like,
it's panic.
Yeah.
It's panic.
Yeah.
Because, it's like other things you can replace it. I really feel like there's no replacement for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Because it's like 100, what am I going to do? Like, all right, get the beetroot, ginger, like chopping up.
Dude, no, you're spot on. It's, you know why exactly you hit it on the head? It's because you can't replace it. Because like when I don't have protein powder, which is very rare, but the days it happens, like sweet, I'll just make it up later.
Yeah.
You can't
or you just
make
eat
up.
Some chicken, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I'll just have an extra egg or whatever, right?
There is no replacement to like, what is it? Over 100, whole food vitamins.
Yeah. 50 whole food, over 50 whole food vitamins and minerals.
Yeah. Which is just, it's just not something you can replace. And it's so easy. And honestly, it's so affordable as well for what you get. So we take Top Up every single day, which is basically just like greens powder.
Yeah.
All in one.
And as we're getting into a shift of seasons as well, you want to make sure that you're having it in the morning and the evening if you're someone who is particularly susceptible to sickness due to seasonal changes. I know when some people move from cold to hot, they get sick and vice versa. So if you are one of those people, it's a good time to start doubling your dose. So rather than just one teaspoon in the morning, you have a teaspoon in the morning and you have a teaspoon in the evening. So if you guys go to activatednutrients.com.au, you can use the code MMP10 and you get 10% off. Sorry.
Offer MMP.
Offer MMP.
They have been a sponsor for like 4 years, but we'll get it.
And so we're recording in the evenings now, guys. It's a bit of a shift. So offer MMP and you guys get 20% off. But what I'd recommend is just getting the subscription so you don't end up in a position where you run out. So offer MMP for a one-time buy. Position. Yeah. And subscription if you guys want to get that 20% off for life on the product. All right, guys, here we go with Jay Faruja.
All right, My Muscle Project, welcome back to another episode. Today we have one of the guests that we tried to get on. Actually, we closed out. This is going to be the closing of the chapter of the guests that we were supposed to get on.
No, we're still trying to get Brad Schoenfeld.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He's going to come on soon.
Today, sharing the line with us is Jay Faruja. He is the host of Renegade Radio. And as we found out from Zach Evanesh and Luke Hossevar on the trip, you know, the OG of garage gym owners, and some cool stories there about Zach buying your York plates from one of your gyms and stuff like that. So
I think he bought a bunch of stuff from me.
Zach buying gym off or buying secondhand equipment off another gym, and Zach's already, you know, been in the game a long time. He's early, so you're super early. So that's something I want to get into. But before that, I actually wanted to open with a question. We did speak about this a lot with Luca. Well, he spoke about it. We listened. And you brought it up.
That's so unlike him. Just ramble.
And you've brought it up before. And you mentioned it on a podcast, I believe you did with Mark Bell. You moved to where you're living now in California after, I think, being on the East Coast. I think originally from New Jersey, and you just mentioned that it was the environment that you hadn't realized for a long time until it kind of came into your awareness that was really holding you back. And it was like the number one thing Luca kept going on about. It's like, if you want to change your life, like the first thing that you change is your environment. Maybe you could start with that and just tell us the stories of, or a story of how you kind of came to the realization that the environment that you were in, where you grew up, was kind of holding you back, and what kind of spurred you to move.
Yeah, I think it's irrefutable that environment triggers behaviors. And, you know, that's not to say that if you move somewhere else, automatically all your problems go away. You can't run away from your problems and you don't automatically change. But it does seep into your subconscious. Everything seeps into your subconscious, what you look at on your phone, the news you listen to. But I think most importantly is who you spend your time with. And, you know, that's why Luca and I spend so much time together. He was just here staying in my house this weekend, and because we go out of our way, we fly to be with people who are important to us and make us better. And so I had a lot of, you know, habits, bad habits, limiting beliefs, things that were holding me back. And I realized that so many of the people around me weren't really helping me get better. There was a lot of people who would say, oh, it must be nice, or people who would gossip, or people who would complain, and people who just want to see you unhappy as well, you know, crabs in a bucket. And if you come up with a great idea, it's always, well, that's kind of risky. Play it safe instead of, oh, yeah, that's great. And what if you do this? You know, that, for example, that's what Luca will do. We run ideas off each other every day. And we're like, yeah, that's awesome. And here's how you could 10X it. But I just realized that I had to get out. I had to go somewhere. I had this quote, you know, that I'd heard from Henry Rollins in my mind about, you know, getting out and reinventing yourself somewhere, giving yourself a chance to reinvent yourself. And I think it's just hard to do when you're in the same town that you grew up in, around the same people that you've known for 10, 20, 30 years, driving up and down the same roads. And a lot of people have issues with their family, their parents, their siblings. That's not uncommon. It takes a lot to work through those, but I think getting away and having some separation is paramount in working through those, you know, and figuring out who you are. And again, just getting around the right people. So I wanted to distance myself from so many of the kind of negative people and the craps in a bucket, and just find where the people that I want to be around were at. And so that gave me a chance to get started on this kind of road of personal development.
And what were some of those limiting beliefs that you mentioned?
You know, I think everybody who is shy and quiet as a kid, over time, that becomes your narrative and an untrue story that you tell yourself and you tell the world. And you say, well, I'm just shy and quiet and I'm introverted. You label yourself introverted. And I think that's just like saying that you can't squat 135 the first day you go in the gym. Well, eventually you could if you work up to it. It's like saying, I can't play the guitar. I suck at the guitar. No, you just never played. Practice for a year and then let's discuss it. Like, you can improve anything. So I thought that I was introverted, and I was quiet, and I was shy. I thought that you know, I just didn't love myself. I didn't have a lot of confidence. I didn't think I could achieve a lot of things. And that came from a lot of different things, childhood, maybe lacking support. And so I just had to go out and figure out, like, how do I overcome some of this stuff? Because I know I'm never going to get where I want to with these beliefs, these self-limiting beliefs.
And did your, like, your journey in fitness, like, had that already started at that point and you still had those beliefs manifesting? Just because, you know, a lot of people believe, and it happens, you know, both ways, that, you know, changing their life through fitness can obviously change a lot of those beliefs in themselves and feel good about yourself, but it's not always an instant fix. A lot of people can improve their health and their body and how they look, but still have so many of the self-sabotaging beliefs. I'm not good enough. I'm still fat. I'm still, you know, there's always that little bit of a lag, right? Where there's this improvement that happens, but the mental, the perception of yourself still lags behind.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So I started training in 1986. I was a fat kid, and I was skinny fat, and I was always insecure and shy. And training definitely helped me to increase my confidence, for sure. And I put on a suit of armor, and I went from high school graduation, weighing 147 pounds, to 225 and walking around for 10 years like that. And I kind of just created this suit of armor and all these tattoos and everything and this angry scowl that I walked around with, you know, to protect myself. And while it did increase my confidence a lot and made a difference in my life, you know, it wasn't until a few years ago. Which is funny now that I'm 44 and I know a lot of people my age are like, man, I just started figuring life out a few years ago and I'm still on this journey now. So it wasn't until a few years ago that I realized that even though it did so much for me, there was still a lot of stuff in my head and in my heart that I needed to fix and really get a little more introspective. And so certainly fitness is the foundation. I think it'll always be the foundation. It keeps you mentally, physically, emotionally healthy every day, but there's deeper work to be done for sure for everybody.
And then, so moving to the new like environment, obviously you don't know anyone in the city. So like, how would you go about, like, just advice for anyone, right, that wants to surround themselves with better people? Like, what are some of the steps or what are the things that you do to kind of attract those people? You know, you see someone super cool and you like them and so maybe see him at the gym or whatever. Like, how do you kind of make that approach? You know, you can't just be friends with everyone, but you want to try and bring good people into your life. So how did you kind of go about that when you moved?
Yes. So the most important thing you got to do is go where people are. So many people always ask me, like, oh, I need to build more relationships. How do I get this kind of in these circles that you're in and have all these close friends and this? Well, nobody's coming and knocking on your door saying, hey, bro, I have 10 amazingly cool people outside. Let's go and we're going to go backstage to your favorite band. Like, that just none of that's happening. So if you're just sitting there and scrolling through your phone, nothing's ever going to happen. You actually have to get up, leave the house, go where people are. So what your phone is good for is to go on volunteermatch.com, go on meetup.com, get involved in local stuff. Don't just be scrolling through and seeing what everyone else is doing. Get involved, go out, but then pay to be where people are. So pay to go to networking events, pay to go to seminars and workshops, fly across the country and meet people. You have to do that. You have to invest in yourself. And especially when you're investing yourself, you're going to be around similar people. Like, so many of my closest friends I've met at workshops and seminars and things like this. So anything you can do, you know, join local sports leagues. Like, everything is practice. You've got to get out and build your relationship, building skills. And what I do is, it's super uncomfortable. It's unnatural for a straight guy to say to another straight guy, yo, let's hang out, give me your number or whatever. But I do it all the time. I don't care because I know nobody's going to do it. So if I'm out somewhere and I'm talking to a guy and we have a ton in common and he loves old school hip hop and he's concerned with this and he's in the train, I would say, dude, let's hang out. Let's grab coffee one day this week. Then six out of 10 times the guy will think I'm gay and I'm trying to hook up with him. That's totally fine. I don't care. I'll just be like, yo, give me your number, whatever he's comfortable with. Give me your number, give me your email, something. I'll hit you up. So you have to, a couple things. The ball's always in your court. Otherwise, every meeting with somebody cool that you want to be friends with ends like this. All right, man, it was great seeing you. Let's catch up soon or let's hang out. Definitely. Yeah, peace. You never see the person again.
Yeah.
You cannot leave that meeting in person without you getting out your phone. You don't give them your contact information. You go like this. Yo, man, great meeting you. Dude, let's hang out this week. Hopefully you have some kind of thing that will benefit them. Oh, I want to send you a link to this book I think you'll love.
Right.
Or, oh, you love Pearl Jam? Well, my friend knows Eddie or this guy. Cool. let's do this. So you're going to hook them up, send them something, get their email, get their number. Within 48 hours, you're going to text them, you know, how's Wednesday at 3? Can you meet for coffee at this place? Whatever. And then start building that relationship. That's how I build relationships all the time, because nobody's going to do that. Mm.
How did you build the relationship with Luca? So
we were at a some kind of like business thing together that we invested, you know, a few hundred or $1,000 or something to be there. And we went out and partied that night together, and we kind of just hit it off. And then he was in LA a few weeks later, and he reached out to me, and we grabbed dinner, and then we went out in West Hollywood all night, and then that was it. You know, kind of just grew from there. Mm.
Yeah, it's
and now he's one of my best friends, and he was, before I knew him, he knew me. He was a fan of my stuff. He followed my stuff when he was just getting started, kind of like Zach and Elliot Hulse and Mark Bell and a lot of these guys. And now we're all close personal friends. So anybody who's looking at somebody online or listening to somebody's podcast, you can be that person's friend if you want to be. You just have to reach out to them, provide value, let them know who you are, leave comments on their stuff. There's so many people that I could tell you in the industry who are now personal friends. And I know people who are actors and pro wrestlers, and fans are personal friends of theirs. And including me, like when I have parties at the house, there's people that I was fans of, and they now come over, hang out on a Saturday night. That's like awesome. Anybody can do this kind of stuff. You know, you just have to be willing to do it and to try it.
Yeah. And then that same idea, how do you approach that through the podcast? Like maybe there's a guest that you don't necessarily have a personal connection to and you want to reach out and have them on. Is it just a cold email, or is it you always try and find someone that they know, or how do you get on a guest that, you know, you've always, been a fan of, or someone big that you want to have a chat to?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been fortunate enough and lucky enough that I know so many people. So most of the guests we've had on in 300 shows, I'd say, you know, 60% of them I already knew. And then another 10 or 20%, I knew somebody who knew them. So there's been a few kind of times where I reached out and it was just a cold email or like an Instagram video, like whatever. Right. So it's more personal. Yeah.
That's funny. We got back from the trip and we were talking about in person versus online, and just the different levels of connection that you make. And It's funny because you do. If you look at the best podcasts in the world, like very few of them have a lot of online chats. It's a lot of in-person stuff, and you know, it makes you think, okay, so how do I get more in-person? Well, you could do what we do. You could travel across the pond, and you could, you know, spend a lot of money and go to all these cities and interview these people and have this great experience. But it seems like a lot of people now in podcasting are kind of all gravitating to one sort of area. Like California is like a big spot. In the UK, like London's a big spot for a lot of English podcasts. It's kind of becoming this hub of podcasters so that they can travel and be on each other's shows and get each other on, especially the people that are in the podcast game. Like obviously there are people that don't have their own podcast, that people invite them on all the time. But podcasters like being around other podcasters. It's just kind of, there's just something different about it. How have you found that, like just being in kind of like a podcast city or state?
Honestly, I have no idea. I don't have an answer for that question. I never really thought about it.
Yeah, I guess probably a better question to ask then is, like for you with your podcast, like how did you see it change like your life and your business? Obviously, it gave you more opportunities than whatever if you didn't start it.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely helped me develop a lot of relationships because I did it. And no offense to anyone who does. I mean, we're doing one now online, but like I did it for a year online and I was like, well, there's no way I'm doing this if it's online. I just don't want to do it because I'm an in-person kind of guy. You know, I like to connect with people. So I stopped doing it. So for the last 3 or 4 years, it's only been in person. So what happens is I block off 5 to 6 hours. So if someone's coming over for the podcast, I know we're going to hang out. We're going to have coffee for 45 minutes to an hour. Then we're going to podcast for 45 minutes to 2 hours. Then we're going to hang out for another hour, and then we might go train, and then we might go to dinner. Like there's been guests where I've hung out for 11 hours with a podcast guest. Like Mary Paleo Chef is one of my closest friends now. She comes over all the time. Like I might walk in the house and she might be laying on the couch and it'll be completely normal. But we met from the podcast. She came over. We hit it off. we went across the street and hung out. And then we started calling other friends and everyone came and met us for drinks and dinner. Mm. We hung out till midnight that night. I think the podcast started at 1 or 2. So Tony Blauer, that's how we became friends. So it's really grown my circle with really cool, influential, great people that make you better. So I would say that's the biggest thing. And then it's gotten me some cool opportunities. Actually just looking at the thing, you're like, I wouldn't have been hired by the Dodgers if it wasn't for the podcast, because they were fans of the podcast. So it's been great for sure.
That's awesome. So just coming back to where I kind of started, I mentioned, obviously you had one of the very first gyms, but you closed it. What was that process like, the opening and the decision to close the gym?
So I started the gym. I started training people in 94 and saved up every dime I made to buy equipment, to be able to rent space in a basement. So it was literally underground. It was a small space in a basement. And we ran that for, I think, 12 years or so. And then the building was being sold. And all the tenants had 6 months to move out because they were doing, I don't know if they were knocking it down or doing something else. I can't remember. But I hired lawyers I tried to find space everywhere. I finally found a space that would have been good, but I had to hire a lawyer to go before the zoning board to get some kind of permit or something. We didn't get it. And so after a dozen years, I had to close down, and that was really rough. I had tears in my eyes, and, you know, I had to talk to all my clients and everything. Luckily, one of my friends was opening up his first space 4 to 6 weeks later. So transition kind of, I was able to bring like maybe 20 guys over there, but he was just starting out in his own place. So for me to bring my 20 guys in kind of had us butting heads a little bit after, you know, a couple of months. So I said, why don't you just take the guys? I'm going to move into the city. I've been working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for 12 years now. I'm burnt. I'm going to move into New York and just chill out for a little bit and just take a few high-end clients in the city. Did that. And then a couple of years later, we reopened the second version of the gym. It was super rough in retrospect, but it was a good thing too, because it allowed me to really focus on building up my online business and, you know, getting out and doing some of this stuff and doing more high-end one-on-one training, live in the city. So that's what I always tell people. You know, I have so many people in my coaching group who go through things like that. Their lease falls through or any kind of terrible thing happens. And it's always hard to see it at the time. And if something horrible happens to me an hour from now, it'll be hard for me to see it at the time. But usually something good comes out of it. You know, things happen for a reason. If you're strong, you battle through it. There's always some kind of, you know, rainbow at the end of the storm on the other side.
And when you transition from mostly training people in person in your gym to doing, I guess, more of your time online, or the vast majority of your time online, was it like the podcast? Like, you realize, hey, I really just miss training people in person? A bit like what Zach found as well. Or do you think that the mix is better for you?
I definitely like a mix for sure. I don't like spending a lot of time on a computer. I can tell you that. I like being out in person more. But I think, you know, after you've been doing this, I mean, I've been training people since 94. Like, people tend to burn out in this business, training people a lot, especially if you're doing one of those long 12-hour days all the time. Or even if you're not working a lot of hours, but you're training people 6 to 9 and then 5 to 9 at night or something like that, or 5 to 8. It's still a long day and you get burnt out. So I still do love to be in gyms. I love to be around people, I love to be in the environment. But of course, it makes sense to help and reach more people and have more passive income with some online stuff too.
Yeah, it's such a good balance, I think, for trainers.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, you're still helping people in the same way, but it's like, because they're so opposites, training somebody in person and sitting by yourself at home on a computer, it's like such a nice yin and yang. And I do think it's probably essential for most people in their career somehow.
Well, we talked about it with the Mind Pump guys, is that like the commission-based or whatever the hourly pay is or the salaries now are becoming more favorable to the business. So, it's like you could work the same hours that you worked in a commercial gym in, I don't know, 2005, but you work those same hours, train those same clients in 2019 and you get paid less. Mm. So, they were saying, you know, it's now on the trainer to be building an email list to sell, you know, programs online and to have a podcast, to give more content, to write articles so that they do build some kind of extra income online, because the game is sort of really changing in person. And online gives you access to the world. And so, you know, if your local economy is suffering, you can reach out to an economy somewhere else in a different city where it's booming and have online clients there. So, it gives you more opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, I can see both sides of the coin. A lot of people shouldn't try to do the online thing. It's not for everybody. And if you understand business and you're good at training, you can make 6 to 7 figures easily and have zero online presence, not even do social media, not even run ads. I have guys I've coached that have done it. So I definitely see both sides of the coin. First of all, you need to train clients in person for at least 5 years before you start selling stuff and putting that info out online. B, people think they have to go online. They're like, dude, I hate social media. I hate this. I hate that. I suck in front of the camera. Like, so don't do it. You don't have to do it. Like, the guy who runs that super successful Italian restaurant down the street doesn't do it. Mm. This guy doesn't do it. There's a million people who don't do it. You don't have to do it. Not everybody has to sell an ebook or programming online. I think that's crazy to think that you know, I agree with what you guys are saying, what the Mind Pump guys are saying. It's good for a lot of people, but everyone don't think you have to do it. Like, everybody's different. Everybody will have their strong suit somewhere. I have a good friend who's been training people as long as I have. He's a year older than I am. And he will never go online. He'll never do stuff online. And that's perfectly fine for him. He makes a good 6-figure income and loves what he does. You know, you can't define success or happiness based on what other people are telling you it should be, or what you see on social media, or what you think it should be, or what everyone else is doing. You know, at the end of the day, I think we live in a world these days in 2019 where nobody even knows who they are anymore. So how do you know what you should be doing for business? How do you know what makes you happy? Are you you? I saw that on some billboard the other day. I was like, man, that's deep. I don't think a lot of people can answer that anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Like, there was like, Instagram put out that thing. I don't know if you saw it. They've started testing in one city in Canada. I want to say Toronto, that a select few thousand people are experimenting with the no like counter, or there's no like counter on Instagram. So if you like something, you won't see it in the feed. You'll just see the thing, but you won't see 26,000 people have liked this photo. And I was explaining it to some of the clients in class, and someone brought up, they go, well, then how will I know if I like it or not? I go, well, I just look at it, and if you like it, like it. She goes, but I need to know if everyone else likes it. I go, we've lost it. We've completely lost it. We don't know, like, what we like anymore. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You can't look at something and decide if you like it. So, are you you? That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. It's accurate. Yeah. I think now because, you know, it's a really heated discussion at the moment, that, like, the digital wellness and stuff. We had, we actually had this company called TikTok. I don't know if you've heard of it, Jay. It's yeah, so it's like the fastest rising social media app. It's got 1 billion active users a month, so it's huge. Yeah, and they come into this office that we share, and they're speaking to all the businesses. And they're like, you have to get on it. We're just upgrading the commerce side of things. This is going to be the next revolution. We're like, oh shit! And so they had the CEOs that were there, and they had, like, the top creator in Australia. He's got, like, I don't know, 3 million followers or something. And he was kind of explaining it, and everyone was really fired up to use this app. And so we go and download the app, because that was the big takeaway, right? If you want to really know what this thing's about, use it for the next week and see how it can fit into your business. And we get this app, and I texted Raph. I go, did you use TikTok? Because I used TikTok. Was that just the biggest waste of 30 minutes in your life? Because that was a huge waste of 30 minutes. Like, what we are doing, we are getting, well, obviously, our attention span is dropping dramatically, and we're just filling our heads with just useless shit.
Man, in my feed, like, I saw 12 videos. 2 of them were people getting chased by kangaroos. Like, they were funny, but it's just strange.
Yeah. Well, where do you sit on this whole social media thing, Jay? Obviously, you've seen the whole revolution of it, right, before it even began, and now, obviously, the other side of it, and you use it extremely effectively, but have you got washed up in it in a negative way in the past, or do you feel like you've always had a handle on it?
Oh no, I'm washed up in a negative way right now. I think it's look, I haven't been on Twitter in I think 2 years now, and I haven't been on Facebook probably in a decade, except for the one or two private groups I run on there. Mm. So I remember one day, like 10 years ago, I had maxed out at 5,000 friends when you read that, and I don't think this is when I had, like, a part time assistant and she wasn't around. So I hated Facebook so much that I sat there and manually deleted all 5,000 of my friends. Okay. But I still do use Instagram, and I try to schedule posts and have my assistants do stuff for me. But honestly, I probably, and I have, like, a little a blocker app and timers. all that being said, I still use it more than I want to, and I still find myself like sitting at a red light or an elevator on it, and then I'll be like, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? And I'll freak out, you know? But so I try to be conscious and try to get better at it.
Yeah. It's just the patterning, right? It's we get bored so easily now that we just look yeah. for that hit. And yeah, I think that there needs to be some kind of daily practice in our lives that keep us, you know, a little bit more distant from that stuff to become a little more focused.
It's become a disaster with lat pull downs in regular gyms, because now it's already a high demand piece of equipment.
Yeah.
But now everyone sits on Instagram between sets. So the opportunity for supersetting has completely disappeared. And I don't know if you know, but most gyms now have a little sign up, like, don't use your phone.
Oh, really?
Sitting on the machine in between sets.
Wow.
Really?
Well, they do it for this first year.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's terrible.
Jay, what are your, like, some, this is like a question we ask later, but just on that, do you have stuff around, like, you just mentioned blockers and that sort of thing, like, are there things that you recommend to people, like around training or just around like their morning routines that can help them not get so sucked up into the digital world?
Yeah. So what do we use? We use Rescue Time, Freedom, a couple different apps like that. Like I have my computer, so it blocks everything. So in the morning, like I can't waste time checking sales and checking stats and downloads and all that kind of stuff. So I put that in, not Freedom. Self-control app. So I put up all these little sites that I'll waste time checking, and I don't allow those to come on until 10 in the morning, so I can do important work, and then I'll use those later. I keep my phone off. I never keep my phone in my bed. Like, it blows my mind when people keep their phone in the bedroom. Phone's off. It's out in the living room. I don't turn it on, so I've been up for a couple of hours, got important stuff done. I think those are the things. And I turn my phone off at a certain hour at night. You know, those are the main things, certainly.
Nice.
I'm never scrolling through and using my phone at the gym. Definitely not doing that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the gym's a big one, especially bodybuilding. Work rest. It's just like the temptation is outrageous, it's just because people are listening to their music, so it's always on them. That's the hard part. What, Jeb? What do you think about the word retirement? Like, for a lot of people, it's something that they chase, especially in America. It's obviously like, you know, work your whole life, then retire. You've been doing this for a very long time, and you know you're only becoming more successful as time goes on. Whereas, you know, a lot of people start to look towards the finish line. You know, around, I don't know, 55, 65 years old. What's your kind of thoughts on just like retirement in general for people?
Man, honestly, I had never thought of it. No one's ever asked me that, so I don't know. I've never thought about it, like, and I never think about. Yeah, that's funny. Something came up recently where people are like, man, you don't think about a lot of things that normal people think about. I don't know. I never thought of that. I just feel like I'll always just keep going. And as long as I'm happy doing stuff I like. And I don't know. I'll tell you, it would seem horrific to me if every day I lived a life where I went to a job because they paid me benefits and because I had security and a pension plan. And I look forward to my retirement, and I had to put in my 25 years or whatever it is to work, and then I get XYZ. Like, that would be awful. I don't know. I've never worked for anybody else since I was 15. So, and every day there's a risk. You know, you get up when you don't work for somebody else, there's always a risk. You kind of never know if someone's going to take it all away from you or something horrifically bad can go wrong. But I'd rather live with that stress than be unhappy and work for somebody else.
Yeah, well, I've just seen it happen too many times where when you work for someone else, right, majority of people do, it all gets taken away from them. Like,
yeah,
they lose their job very quickly. And that fear would keep me up at night versus the other stresses that we have as a business owner. I mean, it's always a trade-off, but
yeah,
and I'm sure you've had the days where you're like, oh, fuck it, I'll just quit this whole thing and just go work for someone to be easier, get rid of so many problems. But I think ultimately some people are just wired a little bit differently. They just can't work for other people. What have been some of the things that you've created that you've been like super proud of with kind of your journey? You know, the gyms you mentioned before, but just some of the stuff you built online, these groups that you keep mentioning. What are some of the things that you're most proud of?
Yeah, I think with the gym, I mean, I always remember when parents came up to me and said, and maybe I help their kid get a scholarship or break a football record or any kind of record or whatever, or gain 30 pounds. Like, and that was cool, but what was great, was super impactful and meaningful, was when the parents would come up to me and say, you know, Patrick's a better person because of you. He's more mature. He's quieter. He's better with, has a better relationship with myself and his dad, or maybe he grew up with a kid who grew up with it without a dad or something, you know, and I've had moms come to me and explain this stuff to me. And so that was always awesome. That was always super meaningful and impactful. I think the work that I've done the last few years with our Renegade Brotherhood coaching group has been really great, you know, to be able to spend a year, and in some cases more than a year, working with guys and seeing them four times a year at meetups, helping them, you know, just grow physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, see them build better businesses, see them come out of their comfort zones, see the way they carry themselves and their body language change, their communication skills change and improve. Like, that's really cool. And to see them find who they are and find happiness and come to me and tell me, like, hey, I was about to get divorced when I met you, and now my wife and I have the most amazing relationship. We're making more money. I'm in better shape. Like, things like that. It's amazing to see.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. Do you find that, like, because you work with gym owners as well, have you found the, you know, kind of CrossFit scene and the explosion of the boutique garage gym has been ultimately a better thing for the fitness industry?
Yeah, I think it's great for sure.
Yeah. And how do you feel about the rise of these, like, new fitness group franchises, Orange Theory, F45? Have you participated in a lot of them? Have you worked with any of their owners or anything like that?
No, never. But I think it's all good. I mean, you know, some of the training probably I would disagree with and think it was awful. I don't know enough about it. Some of it maybe I would hate, but I just think it's good for, you know, the fitness industry as a whole and people. Like, there's more awareness. I mean, 20 years ago, or, you know, in the mid to late 90s, when I was doing what I was doing in an underground gym and having people do snatches and squats and sled drags and farmer's walks, and we had to build all of our own stuff. You couldn't order it on Rogue. You know, we had to create all this stuff. And if you told me that all mainstream people were doing that, and that would be on Adidas and Nike commercials, and there would be these places all over where people are training like this, I would never have believed it. So I think it's awesome. And I think, you know, some people will say, oh, well, that's horrible and that's bad. And that's not, like, I get it. Like, if we're going to argue the science of training, I may say some of those things are bad, some of those things are dangerous, but there's more awareness. People are getting out, they're doing stuff, if they enjoy it. You know, you got to do stuff you enjoy. Like, even when it comes to training a certain way, like, if I gave you my training principles and said, all right, do you want to train 3 days a week or six? And you're like, I would kill myself if I did six. All right, then do three. Like, I can't say do six. Like, you have to do what you like, you know? If you like doing a body part split versus full body workouts, do that. If you want to go to CrossFit, if you want to do yoga, do that. Like, at the end of the day, no one can tell you, like I said before, what you're supposed to like. Like, you're supposed to like something on Instagram. Like, do what you like, as long as it's not injuring you, which you could argue that some of that stuff is. So I'd say if we could reduce, you know, some of the dangerous stuff. But
yeah, it's interesting because, like, a lot of people, they want a lot of the stuff that they see on Instagram these days. They come to us, they go, can we do more of this? Can we do more of that? And it's that fine balance, right? Do I give you the shit that's going to keep you at the gym because it's like what you're being told you should like? But I know as a professional that, you know, if you squat too often or if you press too often, you're going to get injured. So it's a tough battle. It's definitely
I think there's always that battle for fitness professionals where you have to do what you know is correct, what you know is right. But there's also at least, like, that's probably the 80%, 20% of it has to be to entertain the client. Like, if you're just a hard ass, like, oh no, this is all we're going to do, well, they're going to leave you and you're never going to have a good business. So you have to entertain them and you have to compromise a little bit as long as it's safe and kind of fits your model.
There seems to be some movements in there that kind of fit the extremely entertaining, extremely hard, and satisfy the client's need to. Honestly, for a lot of them, they just want a bit of a beatdown at the end of a session. So they feel like, you know, they've worked really hard when they walk out there, which we know you can't really do every single day because they're not recovering enough with all the other stress in their lives, especially older professionals. But, you know, sled pushes and farmers walks and stuff, they're super hard. And I mean, they're not going to beat you up too much versus like a, you know, maybe a crazy CrossFit workout with snatches and bar muscle ups and stuff like that. So,
yeah,
there's definitely movement
in there. It's so funny how every person I've ever spoke to who trains people in the last 30 years, all clients want to get beat up. Like, I've personally never understood that. Like, if I go to the gym and I do 8 work sets and rest 3 minutes in between, that's entertaining. That's fun for me. I've never understood that personally. But again, if that's what someone wants, okay, then we can do those hard finishers. It's like, I'm not going to say because I don't want to do it. You don't have to do it. You know, you shouldn't do it.
It's probably the number one common thread. Like, I don't think anyone has ever been able to scale just like a good quality strength training full body session across the board that has no aspect of something that's really hard or feels like a beatdown.
Yeah.
You know, CrossFit almost got the closest, but it still had a thing at the end that was just kill yourself.
Yeah.
I wonder why. It must be something with the brain chemistry, right? That release, that hit that you get from that high intensity just must release more dopamine than any other training method out there. And so people just get fixed on it. It's like a drug.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense. But, you know, anyway, I think a lot of people will hopefully look for something better once they've had enough of that drug, or they're maybe not getting the same hit, which is what we find, right? Eventually, people come in, they tell you all the stuff they've done, and it is a lot of high intensity training. It's a lot of cardio and that sort of thing, and they're ready to just kind of maybe chill out a bit more and do some more weights. And that's actually one of the last questions I did want to ask you before we get into our final four, Jay, is like, what has changed in your training, if anything, over the decades that you've been doing it since you started?
I try to train obviously safer now at 44. I think it's hard. I realized now when I was 28 and I was training guys who were 40 and 44, I was just guessing. I was doing my best guesswork to know what it's like to be 40. I couldn't know until I was 40. And so now I understand it more. And on the flip side of the coin, I think that all the excuses those guys made and that plenty of guys make who are 40 and 50 in their late 30s is bullshit. And I think most of the advice for people who are over 40 is bullshit. Like, you probably don't have to change that much from the time you're 44 to 34. That things will change. You got to get smarter about it, but don't become a complete pussy and think you can't do anything. Like, you can still keep going hard. Just have to realize, like, recovery might be a little slower. If you've had injuries, if you've had surgeries, if you have arthritic changes, sometimes those joints just aren't going to bounce back as fast. So, like, you might not be able to get in and press again as soon. That might take an extra 2-3 days. That's the reality. But you can still go super hard. You might not be able to tolerate as much volume, as much frequency. You might not hit PRs that you know, when you were 28 or 32, comparing those at 40 or 45, maybe you're not going to hit those. But you can still do most of the same stuff. I think what becomes more important, too, is, and this is a huge change for me, is what can you do to reduce inflammation? Because that could, you know, you accumulate inflammation, it gets worse as you get older. Like, if I'm 24, I could go out and drink 18 vodkas and eat 10 slices of pizza at 3 a.m. and sleep 4 hours and be fine, never feel any difference. But now I'm going to feel it. So eating a low inflammation diet, sleeping, going to cryo, getting massage, you could probably argue that fasting helps with inflammation. So things like that, I think reducing inflammation. And then just being smarter about my training. You know, when I used to hit smelling salts and headbutt the wall and go crazy, like that was insane. So I don't train like that anymore. I don't do heavy singles and triples anymore. But for the most part, it's very similar. I might change, you know, the sequencing of exercises, where back in the days, I would follow the rules. So the big exercise would be first, like when it's squat heavy, and then do lunges and RDLs and glute hams. Now I might do glute hams and single leg squats and then squats. So I'll move it back, you know, and go slower tempos, go down to 5 or something, pause at the bottom. Things so that it makes the exercise harder, but I don't have to bury myself with heavy weight like I used to as much.
And do you have any thoughts on, we sometimes get questions about those anti-aging clinics and the different kind of options as you get a bit older. Is that something you've experimented with or your clients have?
I think it's a really good idea. I think if you're stuck in that mindset of, oh, I don't want to do anything, I just want to age naturally, well, that's fine, more power to you. But I think it's smart for anyone over 40 to go get your blood work done, see where you're at. I mean, if your test levels are horrifically low, you're going to have headaches, you're going to be in a bad mood, your libido is going to be crushed, your physique's obviously going to suffer, you're going to have trouble focusing, suffer from depression, you'll die earlier. So there's so many things. You want to get your cortisol, your tests, your GH, your micronutrient testing, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I live in the epicenter of it here, so that's available. I think I'm a big fan of doing whatever you can naturally for as long as you can. So optimize everything. Like when you get to the point where you're doing everything, your nutrition's a 10, your sleep, your training, your lifestyle, your mindset, you're going to float tanks, you're meditating, you're doing it all, and you're still kind of, you know, not where you want to be. If your test is still 210 and you feel terrible and maybe you need some GH to heal up old injuries, like I'm certainly not against that. Everyone's got to make their own decision. You know, people, I think there's a thing where people, you're like, oh, that's unnatural, but you don't care about the girl who has fake tits. Like, that's unnatural. People are always doing something. If you didn't, if nobody cared about how they look, you wouldn't spend $200 on a pair of Air Jordans. You wouldn't even comb your hair in the morning. Like, everybody cares about how they look. So, and it's more important how you feel, your overall health. And so I think you can't judge anybody for any of that. Everyone's got to do what's right for them.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And do you feel like regular doctors can let you down on that stuff because
they have no idea? They have no idea. You got to go to someone good. So I'm blessed here to live in LA. And I know a lot of people who fly into LA to see doctors here. Because if they live in Iowa or Idaho or Ohio, you know, the average doctor has no idea what's going on with that kind of stuff. So you're going to have to go to New York or LA or maybe South Beach or somewhere to find people who are like that. Although nowadays, I think you can get your labs ordered and then work with someone remotely online too.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it's a good, ultimately a good thing. How it plays out in the next 10 to 20 years will be very interesting.
I mean, you know, everything's changing, the consciousness is changing. Like, you know, there's the legalization of mushrooms now. Yeah. Weed isn't looked at like it used to. And look, I used to look at people who smoked weed as degenerate losers. Now I think they're creative people who are trying to open up their minds. You know, I never touched weed till I was 40. So, and now I use THC 3 times a week. So I think a lot of things are changing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, it's hard people. Have you read the book, How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan?
Not yet. Have to, though.
Yeah, he's actually doing he's doing an event here in Sydney pretty soon. I've got a ticket to it, so it's going to be really interesting.
That should be great.
But I think he started, well, he maybe put into maybe a bit more of the mainstream the idea that, you know, these psychedelic plant medicines, which for so long were this outlawed hippie, you know, just weird culture that was not for the public. You know, he made it. He was the guy at 60 that was like, "I'm going to do this. I'm going to figure out what the benefits are." And I think maybe I can't remember what the term is, but you do get a lot of copycats after that sort of stuff. Just people who are like, "Oh, well, if he did it, why can't I do it?" And they try these things, and then you know that's how a cultural revolution started, and that's what happened with marijuana. So hasn't quite happened here in Australia yet, but it's interesting. Definitely has changed where you are, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into the final four. Jay, first question. You've obviously, it's always interesting asking a podcaster this, especially someone of your caliber who's had a lot of guests on that you probably wanted guests on. But if there is one person that you haven't had on yet that you would like to, who would that be?
It's really hard to narrow it down. I mean, tough, but personally, because I love hip hop and old school hip hop so much, and I have his logo tattooed on me, I would have Chuck D on, who's the lead singer of Public Enemy, and probably wouldn't be exciting for a lot of people because I would just be like, "Yeah, what was it like this time? Well, tell me about that." We would just talk about hip hop, and I would actually want his take on a lot of social issues. I think we just talk about hip hop and social issues.
So for him, he was just like a big idol of yours growing up.
Yeah, I think their music was the soundtrack of my childhood, and it had, you know, it's attached to so many memories. It's kind of, I think, partly responsible for my kind of rebellious, relentless, renegade nature, shaped my a lot of my world views and my political views. So many memories attached to that.
Nice. Jay, give us your out of 5 rating, the official Renegade Radio rating of Straight Outta Compton.
1 out of 5. Oh, it's 5 stars for sure.
All right.
Jesus. Yeah.
They said 1 out of 5. Yeah, 5 stars. Yes, yeah, it's my all-time favorite movie. I think they nailed it.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. I goosebumps through the whole thing because I remember all that stuff, watching and listening to all that stuff like as a kid.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard to capture. Like we always say, to give a movie 5 stars. It has to make you like laugh, cry, cheer with joy. Like it has to do the full 360 of emotions. And like, yeah, that's different for everyone, right? Some people would watch that movie and they just wouldn't laugh or they wouldn't cry or whatever. But yeah, I think they managed to pull all that off for me. So that's why I gave it a 5. Yeah.
So good.
Sick film. Second question, is there, what is something you do every single day or you try to do most days that you feel like is essential for the success of your day?
You just said it there, laugh. I think laughter is so important. You know, I think so many people pay attention to like, oh, I'm going to do all these things for work. I'm going to do all this stuff for my personal development. I'm going to do all this stuff for my health, my fitness and training. But laughter is, if anyone listening, like you can look up, there's a PDF online you can download from Yakov Smirnov, who is he's been a comedian since the 80s. I just saw him perform the other night, and now he's got a doctorate degree, he's a professor, and he talks about the science of laughter, and it's hilarious. But anyone you meet is suffering, is struggling, they're insecure about something. I don't care if it's The Rock, if it's Brad Pitt, if it's Mick Jagger, everyone's suffering and struggling. So the best gift you can give to someone is laughter. So I'm always going to, whenever there comes an opportunity for me to make a silly joke or drop a punchline to Luca or Jen or Becky or any of my closest friends or anyone I'm around, I'm going to take that opportunity. And if I haven't laughed at the end of the day myself, I know that something's wrong and I need to laugh. So I'm going to sit down on the couch, even if no one's over, and I'm going to pull up Jimmy Fallon or Chappelle, watch some new. And honestly, I think if you do anything where you communicate in front of groups, so if you're a trainer, if you run a podcast, if you speak on stage, you should watch stand-up comedy with a notebook and take notes and learn how they deliver and how they present and how they pause, and how they time things. Critically important. So I actually watch it not only to laugh, and I give it to clients as homework. Make sure you laugh every day and be around people who make you laugh. Like I'm going to meet up with a friend of mine in a little while. I know we're going to laugh hysterically because that's all we do when we're together. But your homework should be to pull up some stand-up, like watch Seinfeld, watch Chappelle, watch Neil Brennan, and how they do things, and you get better. So I think that's absolutely an essential part of your day.
Mm. That's cool. It's a different answer.
Yeah. The like making someone laugh or making anyone laugh is the fastest way to disarm any like room or any person.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy. I remember like there's I'm going on a guy's podcast, a friend of ours. He's been on our show. I'm going on this weekend, and we'd still kind of just been like acquaintances and stuff, and most of the chat had been business related or fitness related, but we were just having a drink, and then something came up, and I laughed so hard that I felt like I was gonna piss my pants, and I had tears rolling down my face. And in the moment of me laughing, I was like, I'm laughing so hard like I've known this guy for 10 years. And instantly then I was like, this guy can be, like, if someone can laugh this hard, like, I know we're going to get along. Like, you just kind of inherently know that. If you can make each other laugh that hard, then you're going to connect on so many other levels. Like, it's just, it's given.
Right.
Yeah. It's a really good answer. Third question, Jay. What is something recently relatively recently, that you changed your mind on that for a long time was a strong held belief of yours?
So, I think one is that you had to just hustle and grind 24/7. I mean, that's in my DNA. Like, I have that East Coast hustle and I have relentless sort of my forearm. And I think that was, you kind of like, I was bred like that. Like, that's how it is. Like, we all have that East Coast, New York hustle, like Nas and Jay-Z, and you got to grind and all that kind of stuff. And I love that. But I think there's a balance. I've been fortunate enough to be around some really successful people who have a great balance. And I only used to look up to those people and only admire those people who only slept 4 hours a night. But I realized as you got older, there's much more to life. And I, like, for example, Richard Branson, he'll always schedule his vacations first at the beginning of the year, and he has so much fun. And over time, you know, I knew so many people who missed their 20s and 30s. And I knew so many people who were terrible dads, terrible husbands, and just worked, worked, worked. And that's such a cool thing to do nowadays, especially on social media, always on my grind and all that nonsense. And I realized that there's way more to life than just working. And you can be super successful and make just as much money and have just as much success and have an amazing social life and have friends and travel and adventure and do stuff and play. So I think it's that. And so, you know, I don't regret this. I'm still relentless in pursuing the life I want and being able to live the way I want, have friends and travel and all that stuff. But it's not just about work and chasing dollars and financial success. And and confusing achievement for fulfillment.
Yeah, it's really good.
Awesome.
Who or do you feel like that? Like, when did you make that shift? Do you feel like most consciously was that like in the last few years or 10 years ago or?
It was like yesterday. No, I mean, I don't. It's been a slow change, and so one of my best friends for 30 years, Mike DeSani, we run events together and coaching program together. The more I'm around Mike, and I say this to Luca every time I'm around Mike, I say, man, I wish we had more of Mike in us. Like, and it's so good to be around Mike because he balances me out, and so it's definitely been. I'd say the last few years I've gotten better at it, and I always work to get better at it. I think it's just, you know, a constant kind of evolution, continue to grow in that direction.
For sure. For sure. Awesome. And Jay, last sort of question, is there a book or a bunch of books that you would recommend for the listeners?
I love Essentialism. I love, The One Thing, because I'm all about simplicity and 80-20, stuff like that. I think those are great books. I think some of my other favorites are Tribe by Sebastian Younger. The Culture Code is a great business book, but it's not really a business book. It's just like if you run groups, if you run a gym, if you're around any kind of group of people, it's really a good book. So many, but those are some that come to mind.
Nice. Awesome. Jay, that is you've given us some great answers in those final four questions. So thank you for that, and obviously a great show as well. Jay, where can people find out more about you if they want to connect with you?
J.Fit, J-A-Y.Fit takes you to my main site, and then RenegadeRadioPodcast.com, and on Instagram I'm at Jay Ferrugia.
Amazing. Cool. Jay, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys. Thanks, really appreciate Jay. It. It's fun.
Guys, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the podcast. We appreciate you as always. If you got value from this podcast, if you thought there was something cool there, tag us, write a little caption, take a quote from the podcast, share it on your story, tag us, tag Jay. And it's just the best way that you guys can say, hey, this is a great podcast. Thank you so much for doing it. Please, I would love to have more. That's the only way that we'll hear from you guys. So we do appreciate every time you do that as well. And we appreciate your reviews on iTunes as well, guys. So we read all the DMs, we share all the stories, so nothing gets missed. So thank you for those who do that. Of course, guys, Activated Nutrients is who we mentioned at the start. They are, like I said, health insurance, legitimate health insurance that you're having every single day. It's irreplaceable. You can replace protein powder with chicken and eggs. You can replace carbohydrate drinks with bread and pasta or whatever, but can't replace 50 whole food vitamins and minerals that conveniently. I mean, you could, but you spent all day doing
super inconvenient.
Spent all day doing it.
Unbelievably inconvenient.
It tastes terrible. Tastes terrible. So if you guys want to get their products, activatednutrients.com.au. The code is offer MMP, one word, and that'll get you 20% off. But if you just like it and you subscribe to their products, then you just get it delivered every month so you never run out and you save the 20% off for life. So go do that. Guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.